Hi everyone, this is Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach. Welcome to the May Nonfiction Writers University event. Today we're talking about birthing your book, more specifically birthing your memoir with memoir expert Linda Joy Myers. And if you're on this call, you're probably writing or interested in writing a memoir, which is a long-form work about one period in your life. And producing this type of manuscript tends to be more of a marathon, as Linda says, than a sprint, but it can be very rewarding and healing. In January, Linda joined the Nonfiction Writers University to discuss the first stage in writing a memoir, which she calls kickstarting your memoir, which is how to begin writing the book you always wanted to write, figure out the basic structure of your story and how you want to tell it. And she included some information on free writing, finding themes, learning to write scenes, and finding your turning points. Then in March, Linda came back and discussed the muddy middle of your memoir, which is where you wrestle with the truth, the inner critic, family, and how to bring a focus and universal message to your story. It's where your healing and transformational journey kind of deepens, and you find yourself exploring the larger territory of your story and your life. And those two sessions are already on the site at the Nonfiction Writers University. If you missed them, you can listen and catch up. But today, Linda is back to discuss the final stage of writing your memoir, which is birthing your book. So by the time you get to stage three, the end of the first draft of your memoir, you can begin to celebrate. You've gotten through that muddy middle and all the way to the end. The final stage of writing your memoir has its own dynamics, though, steps that need to be taken to get to the book born into the world. So today, some of the things that Linda's going to be discussing with us and that you're going to learn are the specifics of editing and revision, what specific problems to look for in your final draft, how to handle legal issues at this kind of late date in your manuscript and book publishing, actual publishing choices, how to launch your book into the world, how memoirists focus their blogs, the necessity of author platform, how to craft an elevator speech or pitch, and actually when to use it. So for those who don't know Linda, we haven't been on the other two calls, let me just tell you a little bit about her. Linda Joy Myers is president and founder of the National Association of Memoir Writers and has been a therapist for 35 years in Berkeley, California. She's the award-winning author of four books, including Don't Call Me Mother, A Daughter's Journey from Abandonment to Forgiveness, The Power of Memoir, How to Write Your Healing Story, The Journey of Memoir, and Becoming Whole, Writing Your Healing Story. Don't Call Me Mother and Becoming Whole were finalists in the Forward Magazine's Book of the Year Award. She also was co-editor for another Forward finalist called Times They Were Changing, Women Remember the 60s and 70s. Linda is a speaker and award-winning author, and she co-teaches the program Write Your Memoir in 6 months and offers editing, coaching, and mentoring for memoir, nonfiction, and fiction. And you can find her at NAMW.org, which is stands for National Association of Memoir Writers, and at her blog, memoriesandmemoirs.com. So with all that said, I want to welcome my friend and colleague and our guest today, Linda Joy Myers. Hi, Linda.
Hi, Nina. So thank you for having me back and for hosting all this information that's great for memoir writers to have.
Well, I really appreciate it because, you know, I'm not, I always say I am not a memoir expert. I have edited a few memoirs in my time, but they are a special animal, a unique animal in the publishing world. And while they are nonfiction, they read like fiction. And so it's really quite a knack to write them. I mean, there are some hybrid models sort of memoir where there's a crossover to you know, self-help and that sort of thing, but still, they're kind of a unique book, and so you are by far more of an expert in them than I am. So
well,
I really appreciate you being
and,
here.
It is quite a journey, and we're calling this the three stages of writing your memoir, but of course there's really a million stages. We just broke it down to three so people wouldn't feel overwhelmed.
Right.
You know?
And I know a lot of our listeners have been waiting for this final installment.
Yeah. There are so many kind of I's to dot and T's to cross by the time we get to this stage. But anyway, so do you want me to introduce this last stage, or do you want to start asking me questions?
I think we kind of did with the intro, unless there's something more you want to say. I also just want to handle one little piece of business before we do that. Does everybody know that you are on mute? And we'll take questions at the end, but all you have to do to put yourself in the queue to ask a question is hit star 6, and that will put you in the Q&A queue. Okay? So that's the story there.
Now they know.
So, is there anything, Linda, you want to add to what I said to introduce the topic?
No, let's just jump right in because we have to cover a lot in a very short time.
Yes, we do. Okay, so our listeners are nearing the end of writing a memoir, maybe because of the last two teleseminars that we did with you, and now they want to know how to finish and bring their books into the world. So the first question I have for you is, you have that draft of your memoir done, and you think it's the final draft. When do you actually know that it's the final draft of your memoir?
Because you want to throw it against the wall. I just want to say that because everybody gets to this stage and everybody feels like they're crazy. You know, what's wrong with me? I'm so sick of myself. I can't stand this anymore. I'm sort of kidding, but not completely, because part of how you know is that you really do feel kind of done, like you've said what you have to say and you've gotten all the way to the end of the story that you intended to write when you started off. And of course, if you're like most people, you've made changes and, you know, you've gotten some new ideas along the way, which we're going to talk about next. But you know that you've come certainly to the end of what we call the what happened draft, at the very least, getting what happened down on the page, hopefully getting some what I call takeaways and what the reader is going to see as some of their your experiences that they can identify with, which we call the universal lessons in your memoir. But, you know, you've gotten all the way to where you feel done, and I think you feel it in your body, too. I mean, when you wrote your books, you had an outline and all that, but did you sort of feel this finality in your body, like, okay, this thing is almost cooked?
Yeah, and I'm one of, remember that I have a journalism background, and so I'm very deadline-oriented, so I give myself deadlines, and it's kind of like, I say, when I hit that date, I'm done.
Oh,
you
okay.
Can fiddle forever.
You're so disciplined, I can't stand it, but...
Yeah, well, but by then I can't stand it either. Of course, the publisher, if you're working with a publisher, or even
though.
If you're not, they start giving it back to you to read 3-4 times. I'm really sick of it.
See, then you get to want to throw it against the wall. I told you. No, I'm just
that's
kidding.
Right. So, yeah, that's when you're really done with it.
Yeah, right. So
at some point you really know you're done, and you have to go on if you're going to do this in a professional way and to the standards of traditional publishing. No matter how you publish, you want to do this, publish your book to the same standards. So you move on to editing and maybe even revision. So what's the difference between those two things, editing and revision?
Well, there are different kinds of editing, but I just want to define the word revision for a second. It literally means to see again or to see anew. Another word close to that is review, looking again. And we need to look again at the whole thing. We need to look at the layers of the story, the theme, the arc, your character development. Have you done what you set out to do in the book? What is the, what have you created that the rest of the world is going to get something from? And I think a really good way to be able to stand back and analyze that is to print it all out at this point. You print out everything and have it in pages, in a, like a big binder, and you go through it and read it straight through. But because usually we've written it in chunks and pieces, and I don't know about anybody else, but I can't remember what I wrote at the beginning. I have to go through and make another outline of, I call it an inventory of what was in chapter one, what points did I cover. And then because a book has like an arc, we kind of look at the end and go, okay, well, if I covered that in chapter one, these characters I introduced, these issues, these problems, how did I develop them in the middle, and how did I, you know, conclude these problems or whatever? How did I resolve them to the degree they could be resolved by the end? And so we have to track those threads and layers. So I do recommend that people, even before they start trying to work on what do I do to make this into the final book, that they do that. The editing is going to be, well, there's developmental editing, which is deep editing around where things are. So if you read it through and you go, oh my gosh, you know, chapter 12 should be chapter 9, and chapter 9 should be chapter 15, then you want to move some of those things around. If you're not sure about how it reads because you're so close to it, then you can maybe get your friends, your beta readers in on it. But don't call your family yet, okay? I usually tell people to wait till they get it all the way done before involving people who might be characters or controversial characters in the book.
Okay, so there's a difference between the editing and the revision. So one is where they're actually doing some rewriting, right? Revision is where they're...
Yeah, there's copy editing and proof editing. And copy editing is when you get all the revisions done, then you go in there and you look at your... You go deeper into your word choices. You might get out the thesaurus and tinker away at your language. You are also going to check your spelling and your sentences on a very picky level. So in the revision, the way I look at it is I'm seeing the whole, whereas in editing, you're getting down to periods and commas.
Right, and then there's developmental editing where we're actually looking at the whole book and how it works together, you know, how all the pieces work together, and does it hold up, and are there questions that are left unanswered, and all that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's several different layers, and you might... you might send your book off to an editor who, you might start with a developmental editor who gives you some suggestions on how to actually improve the whole story. And then once you've made those revisions, you might send it to a copy editor, or sometimes it's called a line editor, who then is going to do the commas and the sentence structure and all that sort of thing, right?
Well, yeah, thanks for that. And, but then the other thing that sometimes people need, and people do hire me to do this, they'll say, okay, I just want you to read my memoir from beginning to end. They're hiring a professional, which is me, to read it, and then they're going to have a series of questions that they have that they want me to look at. It's also called a manuscript evaluation. And so that way you're not hiring somebody yet to do all this editing, which is, by the way, expensive. I mean, you pay money for everything, but sometimes it's very valuable to have a reader, an evaluator that understands memoir to give you some feedback first. And then if it looks pretty ready to go to the editor, then you can do that. And if it isn't, then you can tinker with it yourself. You can work on some more revision and some more editing based on what the evaluation says, and then go to that next stage. So there's different things you can do when you think you're, done.
Yeah, I've done that. I actually have often proposed that as a first stage of editing, where I read the whole manuscript and I actually make notes and I give, the author, and this isn't just for memoir, it's for any kind of nonfiction book, I give them, sort of a an overview of the whole book with bullet points for every chapter on what I think needs to be improved, and then they can go off and do that. And when they come back for actual editing, the amount of editing it needs is much less because they're still going through developmental editing and then line editing and all of that. So, yeah, that can be all of it is expensive. People don't realize, writers don't realize that one of the most expensive parts of publishing a book is the editing.
Yeah.
But it's the most necessary to create a good book. But that can reduce the amount you spend on editing.
Yeah, that's true.
So what are there specific things that memoirists need to be looking for in terms of revisions in that final stage? Or is it the same as with most books?
Yeah, I think that one of the things that there's several things, but there's the basic things is to keep track of the theme. This is for any good book that's written like fiction, which this is. Make sure, check out your theme. Sometimes I ask people to put the themes, or what I've done is I've printed out my book and I use a highlighter to show in red, like there'll be certain themes that come back, like let's say my mother. Every time I mention her, I might highlight that section in red. And then every time I mention somebody else, I highlight that section in blue. And you track the colors of your characters, or even you can use different colors for your theme. And this helps you go all the way through the book and look at your pacing, for instance, and where does red and green and blue appear? Or is there a big chunk where there's none of that? What happened to those people? Are they dead, you know, or did you just forget to put something in, or are they truly just don't appear for that period of time? So you want to look at your timeline, your time frame, your theme, your arc, your character development, the setting. You want to check your dialogue, too, to make sure you're not just having a bunch of talking heads chatting away without any body language or grounding in detail. So there's a whole lot of things to, you know, to pay attention to. But the thing that memoirists then really need to go decide is, all right, I need to change the names of these people. Some people think that means changing this to fiction. Absolutely not. It's understood that in most memoirs, people have changed the names. Sometimes people don't. And now there's usually a disclosure at the beginning of most books where they talk about what they've done. They didn't change the names, or they did. Or, you know, it's kind of the post-James Fry thing that people do now to talk about the truth the best way that they could. And so the changing of the names is important. I always suggest that people use the real name while they're writing it, because that's who you're thinking about and who you see in your mind. And then you need to make sure that you consistently change the names correctly all the way through. And one easy way to do that is do find and replace throughout the manuscript and, you know, type in the name you used and then type in the name you're replacing it with. And generally it will change it correctly all the way through, but you do have to edit for that or tell your editor, please make sure that Johnny is Johnny all the way through.
Right, so very, very important things to be looking for. So anything else in particular that our listeners should be aware of when it comes to editing a memoir, or any specific problems you haven't mentioned that they should look for in that final draft? You've covered quite a bit already.
Well, I don't know. I think we've covered it all.
Okay. All right.
Good craft and all these things, details that we've mentioned already.
Okay. All right, so what makes a good memoir editor? I mean, I already said that I didn't think that I was the best memoir editor, because I think that memoir needs to read like fiction. And, you know, I don't write fiction. I have a novel. It's waiting to be edited by someone else because it needs a little help, because I don't typically write fiction. So I think, you know, there are some specifics that people need to know, you know, to look for in a good memoir editor.
Well, I really think that someone who is a good a memoir editor either has written a full-length memoir or has experience working with memoirs and as a developed writer? I mean, maybe you'll have a publisher, somebody who's been a publisher who's editing memoir. Well, they know what they're, usually they know what they're doing. But, like, I've had two different kinds of people earlier on before I knew anything. One person was a straight-on nonfiction editor, and she had edited one of my books beautifully, just did a great job. But when it came to the memoir, she kind of accidentally flattened out my voice. She didn't realize she was doing that, but it did do that. And so I realized, oops, oh, gosh, there's something to learn about how to choose an editor. And then fiction, I mean, if they understand how memoir works and that you don't pretty up the story and you, there's rules around memoir writing. And so, I mean, I'm not saying, who knows? I'm not saying that these people can't be your editor, but that you do often, I think it's a good idea to have them edit a few pages and look at how are they doing it, what kind of questions are they asking, do they look like they leave your voice intact. And on this issue of voice, like, I'm working with someone who's from a Caribbean island right now, and he has a very beautiful musical style of talking. And so when he's writing his memoir, he has a beautiful musical style, and sometimes he repeats himself about 10 times. And in his conversation, it just feels like a rhythm of a song or something. You know, it's fine. But on the page, it looks like he doesn't realize he's repeating himself. So I may not edit out all the repetitions, but I may ask him to go in there and try to take a look at his own voice, keeping in mind that he's repeated the same phrase 6 times in one page, so that he can become more aware of how he's doing that. And then we would work together on that. So there's lots of things to keep in mind, you know, when editing memoir, and keeping the voice is one of them.
Right. So, yeah, it's very important to find someone that you feel comfortable with and who has experience and who you feel can really do your memoir justice. Okay, so what about legal issues? You know, there can be some legal issues that come up with memoir. So how do you handle those at this kind of late date in the stage of a memoir? Do you hire a lawyer, or what do you do?
I think you do need to wait till the late date, though, to really deal with it, because if you worry about every little thing when you're writing it, you're never going to get through the darn thing. Although, you know, if you feel that you may, there's a high chance of being sued by so-and-so in the book that does not come off well, who does not come off well in the story, and they're, especially if they're identifiable by pretty much anybody, you need to consult a literary attorney at the front end of writing that story. And I have talked with people who have decided, because of what the literary attorney said, not to write a memoir. And in fact, sometimes they shouldn't even write it as fiction, because people who write fiction are not out of the limelight in terms of being accused of, you know, adapting a character to a real person that is identifiable. So there's issues like defamation and libel, you know, presenting private facts. There's a lot of burden of proof on you to show that you didn't, you know, create anything that will harm someone that you knew of. You need to really look at a lot of different issues, and it's pretty hard to figure out by yourself. You can read an article. In fact, members of the National Association of Memoir Writers can read an article on the member part of the site from an interview we had with a literary attorney a couple of years ago, and he goes through all of this stuff. You know, we had a whole hour teleseminar on it. But at the end of the day, you should contact somebody yourself, whether it's him or someone else, and ask your own particular questions and tell them all your worries. You should tell the attorney. Now, this is particularly if you're self-publishing. If you're being published by a publisher, they're going to send you a questionnaire that asks you about all this stuff. They're going to ask you questions about whether or not you're concerned about any lawsuits and what you have revealed in the book, blah, 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 blah. Everybody's being pretty careful these days. So the answer honestly, and in fact, err on the side of caution. Anybody can sue you. That's true. People say, oh, don't worry about it. Anybody could sue you. Yes, but it's a mess. I mean, you don't want just anybody to sue you and have that mess up your life. On the other hand, you want to feel free to tell your own truth. And this is the nitty-gritty stuff about memoir. So there really are ways to deal with it. I can only be general right now, you know, because every person's story is unique about this. Some people say, I'm waiting until everybody dies. Well, you might be pretty old, but sometimes that's the best solution. I know people in their late 60s, early 70s said, well, they finally died. Now I can write my book. So it really does happen that way.
So are there times when it's better to consult a lawyer first, though, to find out whether it's even worth spending your time on it? Yeah.
If you feel that there are issues in your book that you know about, you know someone is litigious, you know the character of this person, and as soon as they find out they're in there, they're going to slam you with a lawsuit or stalk you or threaten you or whatever they're going to do, you really should get some advice first, because there may be ways to handle things with that person if they're slightly reasonable that can avoid lots of problems. But not everyone it's a unique situation for each person.
Right.
You can't generalize completely.
Okay. So what about the best ways to publish a memoir? Is there one? I mean, is self-publishing better than traditional, or is hybrid better? I mean, there are lots of choices today. So, you know, is it an individual choice, or is there actually a publishing route that best suits a memoir?
Well, again, I can't really generalize there. According to my colleague Brooke Warner, who is the publisher of She Writes Press, which is called a hybrid publishing solution simply because people do pay in for some of the expenses, but they also get a high royalty rate back out, and the book is highly well-placed in the publishing world, so that's what's called a hybrid. She says that it's getting harder and harder and harder to get memoirs published traditionally now, and that's always been true, actually, but perhaps even more challenging now. And so some people go, oh, my gosh, it will be so hard. I'm like 75 years old, and I don't want to spend the next 5 years looking for an agent and looking for a publisher, because even if you find an agent, there's no guarantee you will get published. And, you know, you hope, you want to hope, but you also, the truth is that if you either self-publish or get published through a small publisher or have a hybrid choice, you will then be an author. You will then have a book. And I think the important thing is to put your priorities in order. And the very first priority is, no matter what you do or how you get published, although if you're traditionally published, they'll give you an editor, is to spend your money on editing. I spent more money on editing than I ever spent on cover design and interior design when I was doing some self-publishing work 10 years ago. So you want to get your book really in great shape. And this means you're going to go through that book 25 to 50 to 60 times. I am not kidding. And you know this, Nina.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, you probably write your early drafts pretty darn well because you're a good writer, but still it takes all that combing, you know, to find mistakes or to find a better phrase or to find a better word. In the later layers. You know, again, we were talking about self-publishing. There's a lot of cautions around now about certain self-publishing companies, namely one called Author Solutions. I won't go into it, but you can even read Jane Friedman's blog about watching out for this company and the kind of fraud and the kind of difficulties that they have caused a lot of authors. And you know, people are your friend that are warning you against getting involved with certain companies that really won't give you what you really want and deserve once you've sunk all this time and money into creating your book. So you do want a very professional design team, and I don't know if I'm going too far. You may have other questions you want to ask about this, but you you need to learn a lot about publishing, too, especially if you're going to self-publish, because it's a learning curve that is so steep. When I first started, I thought I was going to fall over backwards. I was so steep going up this mountain of information. But it was thrilling, too, to find out how the world works out there in the publishing world.
Yeah, so I think the main thing that people should take away, or our listeners should take away, is that there are a lot of options out there. And you have to, I've spoken a lot about this and written about it, that, you know, you have to decide whether self-publishing is for you or whether it's not, whether you're cut out for it. Yes, it can be easy, but as you're saying, there's a steep learning curve. And, you know, whether that's what you want to, whether this is a good thing for you or whether you'd rather do the traditional publishing route where they're doing most of it for you. But there are drawbacks to both. And as you said, it's getting harder and harder to publish memoirs, but on the other hand, it's getting harder and harder to publish a lot of books. So, you know, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't do it, that we shouldn't try for traditional publishing if that's our dream or if that's something that, you know, would better suit the book. So, again, I think just reiterating what you said, it's a process of educating yourself and making sure that you, you know, you really know what's best for you and for your book. So let's move on, and let's assume that the book is edited and going to press, and it's time to think about the launch. How do you launch a memoir into the world? Is it different than the way you launch any other nonfiction book?
Well, let's back up the truck a little bit. I mean, part of the launch would be that you would have already thought about your what now everybody talks about, which is your platform. That means the stage on which you stand to jump out into the world with your book in your hand. Platform means that you probably have a blog, that you probably have at least a Facebook account. A lot of people love and hate Twitter, but these are sort of the basic places where people make sure they've been building their audience. And there's all kinds of courses that I've given and other people give on how to do this, so we're not going to get into that now. But I know that we were going to talk later about creating a blog, but let's do it now. Nowadays, it's very easy. There's different blog creating platforms, including WordPress and including some other ones, that make it very, very easy to create a blog/website. And you need to have, you know, your picture up there, a bio, a little bit about you, what your book is about, your theme, who you think your audience is, and have something going and start posting about your themes. You don't have to post your book. A lot of people do, some don't. I mean, that's up to you. But it's okay to post excerpts from your book. Again, if you're going to create a blog as part of your platform, please, I beg of you, edit it. Get it edited by somebody besides you. I see too many new authors putting their own blogs up, and they're full of mistakes. I mean, they're full of grammar mistakes and comma and period mistakes, and quotes are in the wrong place, and clearly they have not been edited, and it does not make a good impression that you're going to be an author to follow if you do not have a fully professionally looking and edited blog. Do you agree with me, Nina?
I do. I think that there's a little bit of a problem with it, though, because the majority of bloggers and authors don't have the money to have every blog post edited, nor do they have the time if they're going to blog frequently. But there are some solutions. One of them is Grammarly.com, and I just posted a blog post about this. If anybody wants to go to howtoblogabook.com, you'll see a blog post there about how to prevent errors in your – I'm trying to see if I can get the name of the blog post quickly – but about how to prevent errors in your blog posts. And Grammarly is a really good solution. Yeah, it's called How to Reduce Errors in Your Blog Post.
Let's tell people what it is.
So Grammarly is an online program where you pay a fee for the year. It's not very expensive. And what you do is when you finish writing a blog post, you copy and paste it, or you can even upload it, into Grammarly. And Grammarly not only checks for grammar, but it will catch spelling errors and things like that to some extent. But the grammar things that it catches, the grammar errors that it catches are amazing to me. They're things I didn't even know, mistakes I didn't know I was making that I've been making for years. And so I feel much more secure if I have dropped my blog post into Grammarly and had it check it. And then I also do a, you know, a check in Word, you know, because Word actually, spell checker and grammar checker in Word has gotten much better over the years. So if you do those two things, you're already better off than if you didn't get it proofread at all. So if you don't have the money for a proofreader or the time, say I post something every day. So I have to admit, I don't have the time for someone to,
Naturally good editor. And what I'm talking
Well, I'm an editor, but that doesn't mean I don't miss things.
I know, but I mean, what I'm talking about is you can have your friends read it. It doesn't matter who it is. You don't have to necessarily hire somebody, but if you get somebody else's eyes on it, chances they'll catch something that you missed. I mean, it's just
They will. And actually, anyone who's listening, I also have a phenomenal proofreader who's extremely inexpensive, who is also a grammarian. And so she will read your work, and you know, if you just give her 2 days or something, she can turn it around for you, and she will catch all kinds of errors, including grammar. So there are some inexpensive ways to do this, but like Linda said, you can just have somebody else read it. Just make sure that they know something about writing, that they're not making more errors.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So back to the blogging. So for a memoirist, we're kind of talking about platform, and we are talking about platform, building the platform before you launch the book on the blog. Are there special considerations or special ways that, you know, or a different focus that you have as a memoirist when you're blogging or when you're building that platform?
Is to have people look at the themes in their memoir and they can blog about them. Let's say you recovered from an illness. You can have people find out about the stages of you finding out about your illness. You can look at what other writing has been done about that illness and comment on other people's blogs or on other articles about the illness. You can talk about your mental state. You can talk about some of the things that you found that helped you. I'm just talking about that as an example. Coming in with different angles at what you did to help you get better. You're going to be teaching the reader something about that. What was it like emotionally to be ill? That's another one. And then how did you change your attitude over time, and who helped you? And, I mean, there's, for every topic, there's about 8 or 10 or 12 or 20 or 30 angles that you can take to, to look at how you can write about these different angles and create copy.
That's pretty much what I tell people when they have a memoirist or writers, is that they need to find the themes and the topics in their book, and to create a blogging plan around those. Those are the main things they want to write on, because the more they blog about specific, in a very focused way on the themes and topics in their books, the more likely their blog is to rise up in the search engine results pages and become discoverable.
Yeah, we agree on that.
Yeah. So anything else that they should be doing as they launch their book that's special to a memoir? Is there nothing that's special? I don't know.
I think the other thing is to look at, nowadays, as you're thinking about the launch, are you having an e-book? Of course the answer should be yes. There's ways you can think about doing the marketing and publicity, which is another whole huge topic, but you will need to think about that even if God himself published your book. I mean, you have to do your own outreach to the audience you've been building in on Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or your own hometown, with people who know you, family, friends, and so on. You need to do this outreach and let people know what they're going to get out of your book, which means you stand in a very different place now. You're not looking at this is my story, this is my story. You're standing in a place, no matter what the memoir is about, it can be growing up with your great-grandmother and planting tomatoes. every summer and learning about the natural phases of the moon or something. It can be a very basic thing. But what are other people going to get out of reading your story and coming with you on this journey? You need to stand in a place of, this is what I am offering you. And for most memoir writers, it feels like they're turning themselves inside out. You know, it's such a journey of, this is my story. Gee, what happened to me that affected me, that, you know, changed my life, and so on and so on. And yes, you're looking at your takeaways and your themes all the way through, but when you get done, you're really standing in the place of thinking about all the time, how can I show people the relevance and the value that my story has for them? And I think it takes wearing, you know, really getting used to that new hat. And so that's maybe more difficult than for fiction, although they still have to think about the same questions, or well, any book, really, right? Your nonfiction books have to be, they're so easy, though, because a nonfiction book, this is written for you. This is written for to help you or to teach you something, you know, in nonfiction, regular nonfiction. But in memoir and fiction, people are learning in a different way. They're learning through story. And so sometimes it helps to have somebody else stand outside your book, your evaluator or your editor or someone you don't know that well, but that you can get them to give you some feedback about what do they think your book delivers. Because, gosh, in memoir particularly, we're so close to it, we can't even, like, huh, did I deliver anything useful? You know, you start to wonder if you did.
Right, right. And so that kind of brings us to the point about talking about your book, really. You know, so do you think that in order to go out and speak about your book and to, you know, to really try to get that message out there and to tell people what your book will teach them, how it will transform them, those sort of things, do you need a pitch for that, an elevator speech?
Ah, yes, the good old elevator speech. Well, so the elevator speech is the amount of time you have to tell someone about your book in a very focused way, from the time you get on an elevator to going about three or four floors, not a 24-story building, a very short speech. And so I'm just going to give an example of what mine was. It took me a while to get there, though. So Don't Call Me Mother is a story about three generations of mothers who abandoned their daughters and how I broke that chain of abandonment and found forgiveness for my mother. Okay, so, you know, of course I had to work on that for like years almost to figure it out. So sometimes, you know, you've probably done this too when you've received pitches at conferences, Nina. People say, well, my book is about this and that, and then this happens, and then that happens, and then I this, and then I that, and then they this, and then they that, and you go, wait, tell me in a couple of sentences. And it's really hard to do. You know, so you need to write it out. You need to practice. You need to go to conferences and meet people like Nina and me and some other editors and agents and stuff and practice finding a way to distill down the essence of the theme of your story and get that in a pitchable, this is called a pitchable amount of words that doesn't take very long for someone to wrap their mind around. And you're going to tell bookstore owners about this. You're going to use it in your headlines in maybe a newsletter or blog posts. And so all the work you've done to create your blogs and to create the arc of your story and focusing on your themes comes in handy then when it comes to focusing down and boiling down all this to your pitch. Do you have some tips for people? I know, Nina, you teach people this. Nina? Are you here?
I'm back.
Oh, I was worried.
Okay. I don't know what happened, but I'm on my cell phone, which I never am, so because I'm somewhere else. So I apologize. I guess it was me who got cut off.
Well, oh, yeah, because I'm still on, I think. So I was talking about pitches and wanted to know if you had any other tips besides what I already gave or anything?
Well, I didn't get to hear your tips.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure you covered it well.
I was telling people to go to conferences and also to use what they figured out with their themes and their arc and stuff to come up with a very focused, small, few-word pitch that they can use and to practice.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the other thing I always talk about is benefit. I mean, especially for a memoir, you really need to think about what not just for a memoir, actually, for any nonfiction book, but what's the benefit to the reader? What a reader wants to know is what's in it for me.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a memoir is really an extraordinary story about an ordinary person, and so at least in my mind. And so I heard an agent tell me that once, and so I think that when you think of it that way, you want to uncover what is the extraordinary element in the story. What's the value to the reader? What is that, you know, what's in it for me factor? So what is the benefit? Because any story you tell, there's going to be something they take away, something they learn, or some way you transform them, you know, even if it's just in how they see the world or how they see a particular type of lifestyle or, you know, anything. And so I want to see, that's what I want to hear in a pitch for a memoir. You know, I serve on the panels at the San Francisco Writers Conference, the pitch panel, and we hear a lot of pitches. And for memoir, that's what I'm always looking for. I want to know, what am I going to get out of reading this particular story? So that's a big one for me. And then I had one of my coaching clients the other day told me he was on a call, and he thought there was an agent who was reviewing pitches, and he actually thought he was going to get to say his pitch, and he never did get to. But while he was listening, every time somebody else's pitch got kind of torn apart, he redid his own pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Until his pitch got much better. So in terms of tips, I would agree with you. I think going to a pitch fest or going somewhere where you hear people getting their pitches critiqued is enormously important, because it is a great way for you to hear, you know, how you can improve a pitch.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so,
that's smart. And we all benefit. I remember going to there was a Maui writer conference quite a few years ago, and I was listening to the feedback that everybody got before I got up there, and I was revising my pitch every second I was standing in line, you know?
Yeah, well, you know, and I won the pitch contest at one time at the San Francisco Writers Conference, actually for my novel, which is still in the works, and and I was doing the same thing. I was, you know, listening to everyone and revising. So
right.
I definitely think that is a great way to learn. Go ahead.
Just one little summary. What we're saying is that keep practicing this. It isn't a first time and you've got it kind of deal. Keep practicing. Keep rehearsing. Keep running it by people. And you can tell when your title and your pitch interest people. They go, oh, I've noticed this. I'm running some titles by for my new memoir. And so some of them go, oh, uh-huh. And then other people go, oh. And I go, oh, well. That was a good energetic little, you know, tickle. So
right.
See what other people are feeling and thinking about this. And it doesn't have to be professionals, all of them. After all, regular people are going to be buying your book, not just professionals.
Right. Okay, so I think at this point, unless there's something you want to add, I'd like to do a few concluding little pieces of business and then open it up for questions, because I have to actually end right at 4. Mm-hmm. So is there anything you want to add to this whole birthing your book process?
I will say that I just want to give a little pitch for some future events. One is that my colleague and I, Brooke Warner, are going to be teaching another Write Your Memoir in 6 Months course, and we're doing a free is Memoir on Your Bucket List. We're doing a free class on June 1st. And so keep an eye out if you're on my newsletter list or if you're at writeyourmemoirin6months.com for that upcoming freebie. And if you're interested in a longer course, we cover all these things in our course, including this part in great detail that I'm talking with Nina about. And the other thing is we're having our very first in-person conference in Berkeley in October, and it's called The Magic of Memoir. And you can find it at magicofmemoir2015.com. And we have our early bird price until July. So just want to tell people about how to keep learning about writing your memoir and getting your memoir published. And we are going to have some agents at that conference.
Great. Well, that was actually the business I was going to do. So you kind of did it. I was going to ask you if there was anything you wanted to tell them about. Why don't you also tell them how to contact you?
Yeah. Okay, I'm Linda. I'm at namw.org is the National Association of Memoir Writers. You can reach me there. And also you can reach me at memoriesandmemoirs.com, where I blog not as frequently as you, Nina, but we all have to find the right blogging frequency that makes it work for us. So you can find me there, too.
Okay. And then I just want to, before we open to questions, I just want to let the members, because people on the call are members, that know that if they're interested in becoming an affiliate, which is kind of like entering into a referral program, they can do that. They can become one of my affiliates. And then as you refer people to the Nonfiction Writers University, you can actually make some money to help you afford your membership or to do other things like buy some books or take other trainings. So if you want to do that, if you would like to become an affiliate, please go to bit.ly/affiliate-NA, like Nina Amir. Okay, so it's bit.ly/affiliate-NA, and that's all lowercase. And so, you know, it's just something to think about. If you're telling people about the Nonfiction Writers University, then, you know, if somebody joins, you'll get credit for that. All right, so Linda, let's go ahead and open it up for some questions. We have about 8 or 9 minutes. So anyone who has a question, please hit *6, and we will call on you. Just hit *6, and I will unmute you, and you can ask a question. This was a lot of information we had today, Linda. It was great.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's kind of fun to talk about, and of course we could spend hours and days on all of it. There's so much to look at.
Right. Okay, we have somebody who has a question.
Hello?
Hello, you're unmuted.
Hi, I have a question. Hi, Linda. This is Callie. It was nice to listen to you today.
Thank you.
I would like to ask a question in regards to the, you know, writing the memoir and in relationship to, you know, any concerns of, you know, about if there's some things that I may want to write, and I don't necessarily want to wait till somebody else is no longer on this earth plane or something like that. Is it sometimes can it be just as effective to write it a nonfiction style and still be doing a memoir?
Well, memoir is nonfiction.
Or a fiction?
A memoir is nonfiction already. So I don't know what you mean by nonfiction style.
I mean by fiction style.
Fiction, well, you mean change everything, including the way people look and what happened and everything else? I mean, that is a novel then. And you can do that. And like I was saying earlier, lots of people's first books were a novel that was based on, you know, they used to call those first novels. Now they're called memoirs, based on what really happened. But you can change lots of things if you're doing fiction, and people will view it as completely fiction. If someone's identifiable, though, or you think they can recognize themselves or that kind of thing, you still need to run it by a literary attorney and see if, you know, I don't know what the situation would be that you would need to do that. But, you know, it's safe to run it by a literary attorney to make sure you're still in good territory there.
So if you're, you're only revealing, like, you know, stories but not giving identifiable information, it would still be good to go through to somebody with that?
Well, you can even do a memoir if people aren't going to recognize people, but most people do. Even if you change names, is what you need to look at is, I mean, you can look at how people, I mean, for one thing, you can just write what you want to write and get through a first draft and then see what you have. That's another solution here, rather than worrying too much. I don't know what your concerns are about. But a lot of people find out that if they just write the story they need to write, sometimes they can work with the person that is in it, and sometimes they can't. So everybody has their own, you know, situation to solve there.
Okay. Great.
Does that answer your question, Callie?
Yes. I was just also reminded about somebody else who completed a book they wrote. They changed their name as the author for the book so that they, because it was such raw information that, and, you know, that was just another example that I saw that being done.
Well, that's a whole other can of worms is using a pseudonym, because the issue with the issue I have with using a pseudonym is that it becomes very difficult to promote your book. I mean, eventually you're going to have to get up and speak, and, you know, or show up somewhere, and
that's
people are going to figure out who you are.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if Linda has anything to add to that.
Yeah, if your picture is not in the book and you don't have any way of knowing who you are, it might work, but it's funny. People have a way of finding out stuff no matter what you do.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
I don't know. You
know. All right. Thanks for your question, Callie.
Sure. Thank you.
All right. We have time for maybe one or two more questions, depending on the length. Anyone else have a question? We have a quiet group today.
Probably a little
Anyone
overwhelming
else have,
about all this stuff.
We had a lot of information.
Yeah.
So while we're waiting, if somebody else wants to ask a question, we have time for one more. I'm going to just ask you to clarify something that I didn't ask you. I was going to, and then we kind of skipped over it. It is, because this is sort of comes up over and over again, it is a necessity for a memoirist to have a platform to successfully promote a book, correct? I mean, it's like required if you want to go to a publisher, or is it not required?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's required no matter what you're going to do. If you want to sell your book and you want people to know about it, you need to have been creating an audience over time that you can then share your information with. And that's what a platform is a place to share your audience that you've been building. And that's what you do with your blog particularly. And then I think Facebook and Twitter are good ways to do it.
Okay, great. Thank you for clarifying. Okay, anybody else? We have time for one more question. Anyone have a question? I'm surprised. We have some of my best question askers here in the group. I can see, but nobody's asking. Some of them I know are writing memoirs, and nobody's asking. Maybe you've just filled them full of plenty of information in your three sessions.
Well, it's been wonderful, and thank you.
Yeah, well, then I think we'll figure that they've gotten, oh, here comes one. Okay, last question. Here we go. Okay, you're unmuted.
Hey, this is Elizabeth. I just mostly wanted to say thank you. It was excellent. I didn't get the whole thing, but I just wanted to say that I think a lot of what you've shared with us, I do a lot more ghostwriting. I don't have really any interest in doing my own memoir at this point, but I've done some ghostwriting for elderly people. And selling it, that is not necessarily their biggest goal. It's just to get it out of their head and their heart and down on paper for posterity.
Mm-hmm.
But I encourage them to think a little bit bigger than that, and you've given me some great ideas.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
And that's a nice point to bring up, Elizabeth, so thank you. And I'm glad you've gotten a lot out of Linda. And the recording will be up, so whatever you missed, you will get by tomorrow or the next day.
Great, thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much.
Okay, well, I think we'll just call it a day. And since we don't have any more questions, I really, really appreciate you having spent so much time with the Nonfiction Writers University, Linda. You've really given us a wealth of information and helped me to flesh out, some information that I don't have for them. You know, you really lent your expertise to the group, and I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And as everyone knows, I often have Nina speak to us at the National Association of Memoir Writers, and I look forward to the next time because, Nina, you have so much to share, too, that authors need to hear about. So I look forward to that also.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And, again, it was an honor to have you and always fun since we're friends.
It is fun.
So we get to talk to each other. And if anybody needs help with a memoir, please seek out Linda Joy Myers. And, Linda, tell them one more time where they can the easiest place for them to find you.
You can find me at the National Association of Memoir Writers, NAMW.org. There's a phone number, and there's an email way to reach me in there, message way to reach me. And you can just make an inquiry. I offer a 20-minute free coaching session for people who are interested in just talking over their project with me. I do coaching. I do evaluation, like I said, and love to have you join us for some of our programs. We also, as Nina does, have membership and free programs. So check us out. Sign up for the newsletter at namw.org.
Super. Great. And if you're interested in Linda's programs that she mentioned earlier, contact her and find out more about them. So that's it for today, everyone. Thank you again, Linda. It was great to have you on, and really you've given us so much information, so I really appreciate it. And until next time, this is Nina Amir, the Inspiration to Creation Coach. And until next month's Nonfiction Writers University event, go out and achieve more inspired results. Bye, everyone.
Bye. Thank you, Nina. Bye-bye.
Thank you.